Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Steve Silver Show on Blog Talk Radio.
What is up? Good afternoon. 5 o'clock here on the Pacific Coast, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Actually, should I reopen and just say good evening? Maybe. I have no idea. It is the Steve Silver Show, brought to you in part by FanDuel.com, the interwebs only one-week fantasy gaming site for all you geeks and nerds out there that are getting all ramped up for the fantasy baseball season. Go ahead and check out FanDuel.com. I'm sure you will not be disappointed. But, we are back, and it is a very good show. All types of good stuff to get to today. Of course, we are on the verge of Super Bowl XLIX. We also have the Brady Gate, a.k.a. Deflate Gate, a.k.a. Why Does Everything Have to End with a Gate?
I like Deflate Gate.
You like Deflate Gate?
I like that better.
I don't like anything that ends with a gate. I don't understand why every controversy or every drama has to end with a gate. I mean, I don't understand it, but apparently it does. You know, if I have too many beers in my house, you know, then it's, you know, then the wife, you know, refers to it as a blue moon gate. I don't understand why. It is what it is. We also have Major League Baseball, though. As you know, Max Scherzer signed a ridiculously huge contract, so we're going to get into, you know, expectations versus hyperbole, because, you know, obviously Major League Baseball, though, is a very profitable business, and these salaries reflect just, you know, the revenue that is pouring into the sport. And it's very interesting that he did get $210 million, considering that he wasn't really even the ace of the Tigers staff.
Yep.
And a very good fringe number one, a very good number two, basically gets $5 million less than a guy like Clayton Kershaw gets, who unequivocally is a number one. So it's a very peculiar deal by the Washington Nationals. We'll get into that. But I also want to talk about expectations versus hyperbole, because there's a lot of things going around in Major League Baseball that I think you and I are very well equipped to talk about and get down to the real nuts and bolts of what true expectations should be versus the hyperbole of what, say, MLB Network does or, say, ESPN. So that's going to be a very interesting conversation, Bo. But before we do that, first and foremost, my man, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Steve. It's been a fun sports week.
It has been a fun sports week.
Yeah, it's been a fun sports week. You know, we get a trade in baseball, we get a big signing in baseball, we get a gate in football.
I know. That's the whole thing. I mean,
been a fun week.
That's when you know you get a very good week, is when a down week in the NFL leads to a gate. You know. There's no football games this weekend, and so how does Major League Baseball, how does the NFL steal headlines from Major League Baseball? Let's fabricate something that is a complete non-issue. But it is, you know, it is an issue, because the Patriots, this is not their first go-round with trying to get over on somebody, but of course, when you have the hype machine that is ESPN trying to fabricate storylines and trying to capture something, you know, there's always the need for that. So, yeah, of course, there is the gate. let me just say this, okay? I don't really want to get a lot into Deflate Gate because, again, it's ridiculous, and I hate that a gate is attached to everything. Did I mention that? Okay. The thing about this is I'm all about integrity on the field. It doesn't matter, Bo, what sport it is. It does not matter. I truly believe the best intention of sport should be upheld. And I understand that because we're baseball fans and baseball has a lineage, a history of trying to get over on your opponent. Competitive advantage is what it is, whether it's been sharpening the spikes back in the days of Ty Cobb, you know, whether it was cork bats, whether it was cocaine, steroids, whatever.
Spitballs, don't forget those.
Spitballs, whatever. I mean, the sport is a montage of trying to get over on your opponent. I understand that. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a sport that I happen to love. But I also believe when I played the sport of baseball, I always believed in playing it one way, and that's hard, and that's the way I always played, and I never cheated the game because I just didn't feel that was appropriate. And when it comes to, I like to know that at least between the lines, things are at least clean to a point where there's the integrity of the game is not withheld. That
right.
being said, the New England Patriots, both Belichick and maybe even Brady, this is their MO. If they can find a loophole in the system, they will try to get over on you, whether that's Spygate,
sure.
which was Belichick was fined $500,000. And it cost him a couple draft picks the first time around. And you would think, Bo, you would think that maybe, just maybe, that might be a deterrent from them trying to get over again. But here we go now. And with today's press conferences, which was ridiculous in all aspects of press conferences, especially with Tom Brady trying to do the whole, aw, shucks, I had no idea until I was, come on, cut the crap. Cut the crap. Here's the thing. You deflated the balls, you got caught, the NFL reinflated them, and then rechecked them and found that 11 of 12 balls were deflated. Okay, so here's the deal. This is what I'm talking about, Bo, and I said this on Facebook earlier in the week. So you know what? This is what I want. Here is exactly what I want, Bo. I want Belichick suspended for the Super Bowl. If you're not going to throw the Patriots outright out of the Super Bowl. I don't think you can actually do that. Because, I mean, who are you going to do? Are you going to put the Colts in the Super Bowl? Come on. You're going to put the Cowboys or the Packers in this? Come on. So you're not going to remove them from the Super Bowl. That's fine. But Belichick has to be suspended from all team activities for the Super Bowl. That means he cannot put together a game plan against the Seahawks. That means he is strictly forbidden, period, to even be in the same building during preparation for the Super Bowl. Heading into next season, they forfeit the entire draft, and he's suspended for the entire season. Because here's the deal, Bo.
Man, you're going straight up. You're no, great gangster. I mean, you're knocking their kneecaps out of a baseball bat.
Here's the deal, man. This is not the first time that they have been involved in any type of cheating the integrity of the game. That's what I'll say. This is not the first time. These are specific people that for it's almost Alex Rodriguez. Here's the thing, and it's not because it's not PEDs. PEDs were just the fulcrum. It's the fact that, Bo, these guys did not need to do what they needed to do in order to win. The Patriots could have beaten the Colts any day of the week, whether it's Monday, whether it's Tuesday, hell, even Wednesday or Thursday. They can whip the Colts any day of the week. They did not need to do this, okay? Just like A-Rod did not need PEDs, he would have been a Hall of Famer. But for whatever reason, these cats are so hell-bent on cementing legacy that they will do whatever they have to do in order to ensure victory, okay? This is what Belichick did the first time around, got caught, was fined, and it still wasn't enough. And now you actually have to make a statement if you're the NFL. And remember now, Bo, the NFL is very image conscious. Very, 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 very image conscious.
Especially this year.
To a point where it's like they should feel insecure about this. Okay? And what you have to do, and if that means the NFL has to come down on them circa 1983 NCAA versus SMU, if you have to levy the exact same type of death penalty against the Patriots, so be it. Because you know what? You can't turn around and tell Marshawn Lynch that he's going to be suspended for one game for wearing gold cleats and then slap the Patriots on the wrist for literally compromising the integrity of the game. Like, that touches not just the play on the field, but it touches everything. And you know what? This is not the first time it's happened. It's the second time. And this is you can sit there and say, well, this was not as bad as Spygate or as bad as Bountygate. It doesn't matter. The intent was to cheat. And that's all you need. And so you know what? Belichick needs to be suspended for the Super Bowl. The Patriots should have to forfeit their entire draft. And Belichick should be suspended the entire next season. And whatever happens, happens. And you know what? That's the way they should deal with it. Bob Kraft and that entire New England Patriots franchise has to be told, and they have to be made an example of for every other NFL team and coaching staff that feels like they can get over on their opponent. Because you know what? Say what you will about what Major League Baseball used to be, Bo. It is not that anymore. And say what you will because Congress got involved, but whatever. It took something of that drastic nature to clean up the game of baseball, and now it is on the level, and that does not apply.
No, I'm with you. I got into a little debate with our friend Chris Mitchell on Facebook today. You know, our resident Patriots slappy, and of course he was biased about it. Oh no,
Patriots fan is biased. Right.
He's like, it can't be a punishment. Cannot be as bad as what happened to Peyton in terms of targeting players because it's not the same thing. Well, let me tell you something. This is the second time you must have said that five times in your little monologue there. It's the second time. Any other team in football is probably a slap on the wrist. You lose a draft pick or two, and you move.
Heavily fined. I mean, this would be the equivalent of Spygate the first time around. It would be heavily fined, and you would lose a draft pick or two. But to give them the exact same punishment as they did for Spygate would be a complete disgrace.
It would, because obviously it didn't work the first time.
Nope.
And let's be honest, the Pats have priors. Okay, it escalates on the second offense. It always escalates, whether it's talking about sports, talking about life, whatever. Your second offense, things escalate. Your punishment escalates. And that's what the NFL needs to do here. Now, I don't know about suspending Belichick all year next year. Maybe for the Super Bowl, I can get behind that. But here's the question. What if it was Tom Brady and not Belichick?
Well, here's the thing. Belichick is a meticulous dude. He is the type of dude, and this is every single head coach, and you better know every single detail of what's going on with your football team, because that, honestly, Bo, is what you get paid for. This is the exact same equivalent of when Pete Carroll was at USC and he kept saying that he had no idea that Reggie Bush was getting money from an agent. Are you kidding me? You're the head coach of the program. You ought to know. And if you don't know, you should be fired, because, well, I'll tell you what, if you don't know what your players are getting into, then, yeah, of course, it's contract detrimental. I think it's called in college football, it's something of the program. It's I can't remember the phrase that they use. It's basically completely ignorant of everything that's going around you. And that's the whole thing. These NFL coaches are paid X amount of money to understand every single nuance and detail of what's going on. And you know what? Every single NFL team before the game, 2 hours before the game, gets to examine their home balls. They get to examine everything. The quarterback gets to feel it. Are you telling me that Belichick doesn't know? Are you kidding me? I'm not buying.
I'm with you on that.
Understand every single nuance and detail, and he knew exactly what was going on. And of course, he's not going to admit it. Of course, he's not. He's not dumb. Of course, he's not. Of course, Belichick knew. That's the whole thing. Is Belichick is knew about it, and of course, he's going to digress. He's going to let his quarterback handle it. But he knows exactly what's going on, and of course Brady is going to tell the trainer, this is how I like it, so let's just go ahead and do this.
Right.
But of course, to sit there and say that Belichick doesn't know, the buck stops with Belichick completely, Bo.
Well, see, and here's the thing, you know, Goodell, if he doesn't have the stomach to levy the kind of punishment that needs to be levied here, then he really does need to be gone, because he set a precedent, whether he likes it or not. He set a precedent in Bountygate. What did he say? He said it point by point, ignorance is not an excuse.
Right.
He set that precedent not, what, 2-3 years ago? And I don't care that it's been a bad year for Goodell and all of his punishment nonsense with Ray Rice and domestic abuse and all that. I don't care. What I care is you set a precedent a few years ago, and now you're going to let Belichick slide by ignorance? Then why'd you set the precedent? Why'd you suspend Peyton for a year if you're not going to handle Belichick the way he needs to be handled here?
Right. Right. I just think that in this case, because of what we know about the head coach, even if and that's the whole thing. By the way, what he did today by throwing Brady under the bus should go to the disgusting category of just exactly what he is. He got caught, and now he's trying to deflect. If I'm the NFL and if I'm Roger Goodell, even if you can't prove it, literally, hand down the Patriots the dirtiest punishment you can get, and let them try to appeal it.
Yeah,
that's why you have the appeals process. But that's the whole thing, is he's a coach, so he's not a player, And so he doesn't fall under the guidelines of the players' union. They can grieve and they can file a grievance like in the U.S. courts. But the NFL should just literally lop them off under the knees. Now, of course, they won't because it's one of the crown jewel franchises, and you can't really do that to one of the. I mean, it would be like you're not going to do it with any of the New York teams. You're not going to do it with New England. You're not going to do it with Dallas. You're not going to do it with any team that goes to L.A. You're not going to do it with any crown jewel, any major market, because the NFL needs them. But unfortunately, and this is why the NFL now slowly has become the NCAA. They have zero credibility in my eyes. And you can understand why basically this whole league has now gotten to a point where I'm just kind of like, well, and this is what the team in my city that's going to back-to-back Super Bowls. You think I would be excited, and I'm just kind of like, well, spring training starts like in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's where it's come with me. You think I would be more excited, Bo, and I'm just kind of like, well, you know.
I hear you. You know, I mean, well, look, I mean, the NFL for the longest time has just, it's been America's favorite sport for so long. It's almost like they got cocky.
A little bit.
Nothing could happen to tarnish the shield. Well, guess what? The shield was battered. It has bent all to hell going into a
bad.
Super Bowl. It's been bent all to hell going into a Super Bowl that everyone should be excited about. What are we talking about? We're not talking about the Seahawks versus the Patriots and what could be one of the great Super Bowls.
Yep.
Certainly one of the better ones we've seen in a long time. We should be talking about that, but what are we talking about? We're talking about deflated footballs, and you can't tell me that Tom Brady didn't notice that football was a little less deflated when he grabbed it in the cold. I mean, come on, you're talking about a guy that spends half of his career every year.
No, and all you have to do is listen to the rag TV shows on ESPN and listen to all those fake NFL analysts/quarterbacks that have played the game, and they'll tell you straight up that quarterbacks like air pressure a little bit differently, and it's not a big deal. But this is the Patriots now,
yeah,
who again, Bo, have gotten over for so many for so many years. I got to be honest with you, man. I hope they do. I hope they come down hard, and I hope they come down swift. I'm not saying that the Patriots need to get, to be taken out of the Super Bowl, but what they definitely need is Belichick. It has got to be removed from the Super Bowl straight up. Let the former Bronco head coach Josh McDaniel take over. This is just, to me, it's disgusting. But speaking of the Patriots, they are going to be in Super Bowl XLIX facing my Seattle Seahawks. And, of course, this is going to be a very good Super Bowl. This is exactly what the people wanted. It's number ones in each conference going head-to-head. It is LeGarrette Blount, Rob Gronkowski, and Tom Brady versus that Seahawk defense. And of course, it's Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson versus that Patriots defense, who, by the way, underrated, speaking of underrated defenses, the Patriots kind of have flown a little bit under that radar, but make no mistake, this is actually a pretty good Patriots team. They have got back to what we should understand of what the Patriots were back when they actually had the dynasty the last time there was a back-to-back champion, which was
right.
Pound the rock, play steady defense, and just let Tom Brady nickel and dime you to death. And this is exactly the blueprint they finally gotten back to, and sure enough, they're back in the Super Bowl. But, Bo, to me, this has the game of – and I know that we're still just, 10 days away now from the Super Bowl – This game has the feeling of it's going to be close until the fourth quarter, and then Marshawn Lynch is going – the Seahawks are going to pound Marshawn Lynch, pound the Patriots into submission with Marshawn Lynch, and I think we're going to see the Seahawks win back-to-back Super Bowls.
I agree. I'm definitely taking the Seahawks in this game. I think that they're more balanced on offense, I think. The Patriots live and die by Tom Brady's arm. I mean, they really do. But you look at what the Seahawks can do, they can pound the rock, the football down your throat, and then when you're keying on the running game, Russell Wilson can uncork a couple of passes and get some big first downs and score touchdowns quickly. I think as long as we see the Russell Wilson that we haven't seen in that NFC Championship game, the Russell Wilson we've seen until that game, I think the Seahawks are going to win this and win this probably by at least 4 to 10 points. I just like the Seahawks in this matchup. They're just too balanced. They're just too much. Their defense smothers teams. I mean, absolutely smothers offenses, especially offenses that really have to rely on the quarterback. That's what Seattle seems to tee up for, is an offense that just has to have their quarterback throw it 30, 40 times, and that's what the Patriots have. They don't have a running game that can offset.
They kind of do, though.
Not against a defense like Seattle. That's my
The one thing about this is LeGarrette Blount is the counter to Marshawn Lynch. He's big. He's physical. He runs north and south. And you know what? The Seahawks have had a little trouble this year defending that big bruising type of back. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, they're very good against the run. And so even we saw in clips that Eddie Lacy was able to have a pretty decent game against Seattle last week. I will say this, that this week, this upcoming Super Bowl, if LeGarrette Blount, and it's not just LeGarrette Blount, it's that Patriots offensive line that has done a very good job blocking for Blount.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can get that going early and allow Brady to use the middle of the field, like with Julian Edelman in the slot, Gronkowski, and that combination, that is going to be awfully difficult for the Seahawks defense to handle. Now, here's the thing. I mean, if they're not able to do that, and they literally neutralize LeGarrette Blount, which I think will happen, it's going to mean Tom Brady, this game is going to be on the arm of Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And against a Seahawk defense that is very good against the pass with the Legion of Boom.
Right.
We saw this last year in the Super Bowl. A lot of people, we thought this was going to be a very close game.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, because again, the Seahawks found a way to, number one, they had Denver didn't even run the ball last year, but what they found out of the way was, number one, you're going to put pressure on Manning up front with their front four, and they're going to take away the middle portion of the field, and they did that absolutely brilliantly. And then
right. This
game, they don't have it's a different type of game, but it's almost the same projection. It's literally take away the first 3 yards of New England's running game. Just literally, it's neutralize LeGarrette Blount and put the ball in Brady's hand. And make them play against Seattle's strength. Make them play Seattle's game. And
right.
If that happens, this will be a blowout. This will be a huge blowout, because you understand what the Seahawks are able to do in very big games. And we've seen them in big games. We saw this last week. This was a big game. And when it mattered the most, guess what happened? Things rolled Seattle's way in a landslide. The last 2.5 minutes was a landslide. When things happen for Seattle in big games and big moments, things just seem to happen. Things just end up working well for Seattle.
Well, you know, I think, you know, looking at this, I mean, a Super Bowl last year, we were saying the same stuff going into it, Steve. Broncos have a good running game. The Broncos have a lot of weapons. Well, Tom Brady doesn't have the passing weapons that Peyton Manning had in that Super Bowl. He does have a different type of running game. He's got more of a big bruising running game instead of the finesse that No'Shawn Moreno showed. But the Seahawks defense shut down No'Shawn Moreno, who was a beast all year long, shut him down. And then they took away the passing game, which is what this Seattle defense does, which is why I really don't like this matchup for the Patriots offense, because they can shut down LeGarrette Blount. They can shut down Tom Brady's passing game. If they get any kind of a turnover battle the way they had in last year's Super Bowl, it's going to be another blowout.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
going to be another blowout. I mean, how did that Super Bowl start? It was a turnover. Quick touchdown for the Seahawks. Boom, done. That was the end of the game right there, because now all of a sudden the Broncos are playing catch-up. If there's an early turnover, especially by the Patriots, whether it be special teams, be offense, whatever, you're going to start to see the same script that we saw in last year's Super Bowl. I mean, the Seahawks, for what they are, and give them credit, you know, they were sitting there at 3-3, 6-4. I was counting them out. You were counting them out, which you always count them out early. I'm not going to lie.
What's that?
The Seahawks. You're always like, they're done. They're done.
Well,
they come back.
Well, here's the deal.
You said they were. Done with 3 minutes left against the Packers.
Right. Well, they were down 19-6.
I understand.
With literally 3 minutes left to play in the game, and they score a touchdown. Like, okay, excuse me, with 6 minutes left to play. The odds of any team winning down 19-6 with 6 minutes to play are slim to none. We're talking like 3%. They score the touchdown. This is what I said. Specifically, this is exactly what I said. With 6 minutes to play, they scored some wild touchdown off a fake field goal. They get the ball back. They score again, and with 2 minutes and 45 seconds left, it's like, I don't know, 19-16, right, with 2.5 minutes left. And I said, that was nice, but it's too little too late because the only thing the Seahawks can do is an onside kick. And the probability in this situation, let alone the NFC Championship, just playoffs with these type of situations, do you know what the percentage is of the team that's behind of converting that kick?
I'm guessing it's below 5.
It's about 1.6%.
Here's
the
thing.
Of the time. That means 99% of the time, Bo, the defending team recovers that onside kick or there's a flag or something. And so, listen, that's the whole thing. And so I said, nice score, too little too late, and of course, they convert. This is why I am such the biggest hex or the biggest moron in the history of cricket. Because of course every time this has, and it doesn't matter. Do you remember when I backed the Montreal Canadiens in the playoffs?
Yes,
I said, you know what? Via Twitter, the Canadiens, I am riding your bandwagon, and sure enough, they lose three straight, they lose a series. And I knew this was going to happen. As soon as I sent it, I said, you know what? This is going to come back and bite me in the you know what? And sure enough, 30 seconds later, blow. Of course, they recover the onside kick. They score. They take the lead. They score. They take the lead. And so at that point, and this is the craziest thing, because they score the touchdown. There's like a minute and a half left. And I said, you know what? There's too much time for Rodgers. Way too much time for Rodgers. Sure enough, they kick the tying field goal. But they go into the overtime and win it. But my point is, you know, this is something where, number one, the Seahawks, Russell Wilson better not have that same game because this is the Patriots. It's different. It's different. They were able to do that. And, of course, the Packers really just did themselves in that game. And I guarantee you Belichick is not going to do the exact same thing. But, you know, when it comes down to this specific game, you know, I would like to see the Seahawks pass early, establish the ability to throw the ball. I think that's going to be important because obviously it's going to help Marshawn Lynch go off. But for the most part, this is about as even as a Super Bowl as I can remember. I can't remember the last time was this even.
It's been a while.
What, New England, New York, back in what, 2009 maybe?
I don't think that was all that even.
I don't think that was all that even.
I think the Giants pulled one out of their you-know-what, just like they did in 07.
When's the last time there was an even Super Bowl? Seahawks-Steelers? That seemed to be pretty even. I mean, it was a wild-card AFC team versus, you know, a soft NFC team. They were pretty soft. They were a legitimate home team, but they were not really all that good on the road. So on a neutral site, you had an AFC team versus kind of a weak road traveling team. That was pretty even. Arizona Pittsburgh just 2 years later, that was pretty even.
That was pretty. What about the one with the Dilfer one with the Ravens when the Ravens had that defense?
That wasn't even, it was like
Ravens and Giants.
Ravens and Giants, and it was Kerry Collins was the quarterback. I mean, come
God, on. It was Kerry Collins against Dilfer. That was even like on a different.
It wasn't even because of the Ravens defense. I mean, that was like fishing with dynamite for the Ravens. It's like it's not even fair. But, you know, it is what it is, and we still got a good 10, 11 days left into the Super Bowl, so I know next week heading into it, we'll have our official picks, we'll break it down, and we'll basically say, hey, that is that. But, Bo, it's my show.
I understand.
And you know what we do? We know what we do on this show. This show is all about hardball. This show is all about baseball. I know we try to disguise it a little bit with some NFL and some college football. Maybe we'll throw in some LeBron talk.
Well, we've never had deflated baseballs.
That's true.
Say that. And we've had juiced baseballs.
We've had juiced baseball players.
But we haven't had deflated baseballs. By the way, did you see the meme that MLB put out today?
I did not.
On social media. It was a bucket of baseballs. And I forget exactly what it said, but it was along the lines of, our balls are never deflated. They're the same no matter what, which I took a chuckle on because I remember the juice ball era just as much as you do. They may not be deflated, but I've seen them wound up tight enough where they shoot out of the ballpark.
The funniest thing I ever remember about the juice ball era is when the Rockies actually put their baseballs in humidors.
Yes.
That was to me the funniest thing ever. But anyway,
I think that's actually.
The Washington Nationals, Bo, signed Max Scherzer to a deal that was $5 million less than Clayton Kershaw. And when I saw the number, I literally, like, spit up a little bit of liquid because I couldn't believe that right. Scherzer got $200 million. I think, to me, in this situation is I don't – like, first and foremost, I give Scott Boras all the credit in the world because this was something that – number one, 210 for a guy who is, I don't know if you think that he is a legit ace. And even and you would think that this type of money would legitimately make him the ace in Washington, but he's not. And what's kind of funny is when you look at how they have this rotation listed out, it's like Scherzer's still like the number two.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of funny about this, it's a deferred contract, meaning they basically doubled the years. So instead of it is a 7-year deal because after 7 years his contract is up, but he's being paid for $14 million a year on an average of 15. And so basically how this works is my first initial reaction to this deal, Bo, was number one, I don't think there really was a market for Max Scherzer.
No.
I think what it was when you looked at some of the usual suspects, LA, both LA teams, maybe even Detroit, Texas, New York, Boston. The guys that print their own money.
Right.
And I think what it was the fact that Max Scherzer, I believe he's 30 years old. They didn't want to give him a 7-year deal. I think most teams were looking right in the realms of five for about
right.
160, 170, mm-hmm. maybe 180 at the highest. And of course, you know, Scott Boras was basically saying, no, that's not what we're looking at. And so basically these teams were like, okay, cool. We're going to go in a different direction. That's something that we're not going to commit ourselves. And I think with specifically teams like the Angels and maybe even teams like the Dodgers, I think bringing on that type of contract is not something that they really were looking to do at this point in time. It's not that they couldn't. It's just specifically, I'll give you a good example, with the Angels, if you're going to give them 5 years and you're going to give them that type of money, the problem was the Angels had about 24-ish, 25-ish million dollars to play with. And if you're talking about $200 million over the course of, or even 180 over the course of five, you're looking to eclipse that little mark. And so these teams were either going over their threshold or even getting close to the MLB salary, luxury tax threshold, which is something that they didn't want to do. So they said, okay, we're fine. The Washington Nationals, on the other hand, said, okay, cool. Here's what we have no problem with the money, but you have to do something for us. Like,
right.
we'll give you the money that you want. But and this is funny because Scott Boras has never conceded to the franchise, has never
ever.
Made a concession, ever. Look at
no.
any deal that he's done, and never has he conceded to the franchise. It's usually pay me. It's like usually screw you, pay me. That's what it is. That's what he's done. Screw you, pay me. And this is something that it's a first because they basically said, listen, we'll give you the money, but we need to spread this thing out because, number one, we have two pitchers that are coming up on free agency after this year, and we only can keep one. And we have Strasburg, who's coming up in 2 years, and we'd like to keep him as well, too. So we have two pitchers that we have to sign – probably that's going to clip both of these guys $150 million. So, yeah, we can give you this, but you're going to have to give us a year on average, Bo. That makes sense for me. And when you look at this, and it kind of fits exactly what Scherzer is. Yeah, I mean, if you just go by the peripherals of 210 over 7, he's making more than Lester.
Mm-hmm.
But this thing isn't over 7. It's over 14. And he's only making 15, and do you know what that is, Bo? That is very good number two starting money.
It is.
And that's exactly what he is a very good number two.
Sure, but you're also paying it over 14 years. But this is what's really alarming about this deal, and this came out today.
The Nationals, if you ask me, the Nationals got over on Boras because, number one, not only does it help them in the short term, because now they're going to be able to re-sign Zimmerman if they choose to, or re-sign Fister, but they're also going to have money for Strasburg. And in 5 years, when the Washington Nationals have to tear down and rebuild again, or 6 years, they have a dude who they have, Max Scherzer, who should still be pretty decent, only making $15 million a year. When the average, you know, when the price for his type of talent continues to rise, they're going to get him. They're going to have a bargain basement deal.
Okay, here's the problem with that, though. This came out today. I don't know when it came out today, but it came out today. Yes. The last 3 seasons of his seven that he's pitching, he's going to be making $35 million a year. The last 3 years of that pitching contract. And what's weird is we have to say the last 3 years that he's actually pitching. It's got nothing to do with the deferred after that seven-year deal is done. It's the last 3 years of his playing contract. They have to pay him $35 million a year. With a team like the Nationals, you're talking about a quarter of your payroll in one pitcher.
All right, so here's how this breaks down, okay? Okay. So he's going to get a $50 million signing bonus, which is going to be paid sporadically through 2015 through 2028. So he doesn't get it all up front. It's going to be every single year he's going to get some of that.
How is that a signing bonus, by the way?
Well, because every single year he gets a check right at the beginning of the year, and here's just money. Just go away. Here's money. That's your signing bonus. Just go take that to the bank and just have a good year.
If you think of a signing bonus, you think of a lump payment. That's all I'm saying. Go ahead.
Okay, so here's how this works. Okay?
Sure.
Scherzer is to be paid $15 million annually from 2015 to 2028.
Right.
Reducing contract's present-day value at signing to about $185 million, with 2015 through 2021 salaries for luxury tax purpose at about $26.428.57 million a year. So, basically, through 2015 – so, basically, the present-day value is – basically $15 million a year at 185, but because it's really a 7-year deal, for luxury tax purposes, it really averages out to about $26.428 million a year for the first 7 years of the deal. Still, $26 million a year for another number two pitcher.
That's just too much. You know, and look, I mean Nats fans are excited, and they should be.
They should be.
They should be excited, but at the same time, I mean, you've seen what an inflated contract can do to a team's payroll. I certainly have. We saw it with Alex Rodriguez in Texas. What too much money to one player means to the rest of your team, that really should give a Nats fan a little pause, just a little pause. Because let's be honest about the Nationals. Yeah, they have a fantastic rotation at this point. Whether they deal Strasburg, Zimmerman, Fister, I don't know. But they've got, right now, on paper, the best rotation in baseball. But what about their bullpen? Their bats? Are they going to be consistent? Because they haven't been consistent at the plate the last couple of years, even though they're winning. They're winning behind their starting rotation. That's fine. But they have not been consistent with their bats. You're looking at Jason Worth going to miss at least the first month, if not the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season. You've got holes in your bullpen. Having that rotation is great, but where's the rest of the team?
Right, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because it gets into our central focus of today's show, which is expectations versus hyperbole. And I'm glad that you brought this up, because there's nothing but been hyperbole surrounding the Washington Nationals since the idea of Scherzer, and when you look at the number, yeah, of course there's hyperbole, because it's Max Scherzer and the idea that him being an ace. I guess the question that I have is, number one for you, Bo, is number one, does Max Scherzer actually make this team better? You know, does he make this team so much better where we're talking about a World Series appearance? I mean, obviously they paid him for the opportunity to be in the to represent the National League.
Mm-hmm.
In the World Series, obviously you're paying him for postseason. You're not paying him for the regular season. I get that. But when I looked at this team from just a X's and O's, they did need another starting pitcher because of the whole fact that Zimmerman and Fister are going to be free agents. And so you're going to have to at least cover yourself on one end. Well, when I looked at this team, you know, I looked at this, you know, I looked at this team as being, well, they're probably going to need another outfielder because Jason Worth is out. Right. So you're going to need, you're definitely needed another bat. I thought the bat first was going to be needed, then a starting pitcher. And, you know, they ended up going the Scherzer route. And I think they've committed so much to Scherzer that they're going to have to either give playing time to Nate McLaus, maybe Danny Espinosa in the outfield, maybe Michael Taylor.
They lost LaRoche. Don't forget that.
Right. Denard Span. Right. Mm-hmm. They lost LaRoche. You know, I mean, they're going to move Zimmerman over to first base, so that's cool. But it's like, because, you know, they got Anthony Rendon at third, so they're going to move Zimmerman to first. That's cool. But, sure. I mean, for the most part, it's like, listen, man, you know, the way that I looked at this was they should have done right by the left field position first.
Yes.
At least try to figure out some type of solution, whether that was a trade. Maybe that was moving Fister or moving Zimmerman for that piece, and who knows? Maybe they're going to do that now.
Well,
this is kind of funny to me because this is why I was an advocate of something that I wrote this week, and I don't know if you took this read this piece that I wrote, Bo, but this is something where, in essence, this is where the Mariners come into play here because. You know, as you may have heard, there was some innuendo about Bryce Harper potentially, playing his way out of D.C. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Washington had tried to trade Ian Desmond to the Mariners at least twice that we know of for a guy like Taijuan Walker, who, by the way, they still want and they still could use because, again, if you're going to lose two, what you really want to do in this rotation situation is at least try to keep the one that's going to be easier to sign and then replace the one with young cost control.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the Mariners were to flip, say, Dustin Ackley and Taijuan Walker to the Nationals for Bryce Harper and then turned around and used Zimmerman as trade bait with maybe one of their top prospects, they could reel in a very big fish. And then could use Dustin Ackley as a fourth outfielder.
And
get the pitcher and get the arm that they coveted. Now, obviously, you and I both know from off-the-air conversations that that's probably unrealistic.
Right.
But the thing about this is the Washington Nationals, it seems to me that Phil Rizzo, their GM, lacks what I like to call creativity here.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Okay, you know, back to your original question. If they trade Zimmerman or they trade Strasburg, both of which reportedly are available now.
I don't know. Actually, you know what's kind of funny is I actually heard different. Zimmerman definitely is available.
And Strasburg's not.
Strasburg, here's the thing. Just like every single team, their top prospects, they will listen. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do
right.
it.
Okay.
They will listen because, you know what, as a GM, you should listen to offers on everybody.
Okay. Now, if they deal Zimmerman, all you're doing is swapping out Zimmerman with Scherzer. That doesn't make you better. In fact, it actually makes it a little worse.
I actually prefer Zimmerman over Scherzer.
I definitely prefer Zimmerman over Scherzer. Now, what this does, I mean, let's talk about the ripple effects of this signing. Okay, what it means is you can't deal Ian Desmond now because you don't have the bats as is. So you certainly can't deal him now. That's off the table. If you actually want to win the World Series, you got to have a better offense. You can't deal Desmond. You can't do it. Now, I think that what the Nationals did, and this is not going to be popular among their fan base if any of them are listening, and I'm sorry about that.
They're listening.
I'm sorry about that. But I think this is a misappropriation of funds. If you've got that kind of money to throw around, fix your bullpen. Get a bat or two for your lineup. Your pitching is not what cost you in the playoffs. It was your bats, and it was your bullpen. Those are the two things that kept the Nationals from advancing in the playoffs last year. It wasn't their starting rotation. That starting rotation was just fine. It's good enough to win the World Series. They didn't have the offense, and they didn't have the bullpen to get that done. And what do? They blow $200 million on a starting pitcher.
You know, listen, man, this is exactly what teams make. Like, he was going to have to go somewhere. And
I'm saying that.
And the thing about this is I'm not saying that it hurts. It definitely helps. But you're absolutely right. I mean, they could have used this money to go around. But then again, this is a team that waited way too long. And I think this was exactly what they wanted to begin with in the first place, was Max Scherzer. But, you know, you lose LaRoche, you lose Jason Wirth, and that is a huge hole. And that's ultimately why they, I mean, a lot of people thought when they acquired Yuniel Escobar that mm-hmm. ultimately meant that Ian Desmond was out the door. And I said, not necessarily, because this team doesn't have the offense to afford to trade Desmond. Now, if that netted them, say, Taiwan Walker, completely different, because which would be fantastic for them. But the thing is, the Mariners will not trade Taiwan Walker for any 1 year rental. So right. even if it was, put it this way, I'll put it to you in plain English, Bo. Even if that meant Giancarlo Stanton on the last year of his deal, and he is coming off a 50 home run season, and he's projecting to have another 50 home run season, the Mariners will not even trade him for Giancarlo Stanton for 1 year. Put it that way.
And they shouldn't.
Exactly.
Definitely. You never deal a blue chip top pitching prospect for a 1 year rental. You never do that.
Right.
That's how GMs lose their jobs.
Right.
The ones that actually do lose their jobs every single time. I promise you, look it up.
Right. Right. I look at this and I say, what is the realistic expectations of the Washington Nationals? And I say, well, they're good because they're in a division that has the New York Mets, which they're horrible. I wouldn't say they're horrible, because they're going to get Matt Harvey back, and they got DeGrom. They got some nice pitching studs, but they're the Mets, and they're ran by Sandy Alderson, who is a little bit past his prime. And then you have Atlanta, who's rebuilding, and Miami, who I think is going to take a huge jump forward.
Yeah.
Miami is going to be the team this year that's going to give the Nationals fits. But really, it's a two-race team between them and Miami. And Philadelphia, by the way, is ran by Ruin Tomorrow's Future. So listen, like, Washington, when we're talking realistic expectations here, I think we both agree that this is going to be the team that's going to win the National League East. And it's probably going to be roughly not as huge as it was last year, where they won the division outright by 17 games. Because that is a very huge.
That took a huge last 6 weeks.
But that's a huge gap. But I definitely think they're going to win this division by at least 8 games. Because I think there's that much separation between the two. But as you compare them to other playoff teams, to me, this is not – when I look at this and I see a very top-heavy starting rotation, and we saw what happened to the Dodgers last year in the playoffs with a top-heavy rotation.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't really do them much good, did it?
No.
And when you look at Max Scherzer, and I'm going to pull him up in just a second – when you look at Max Scherzer's playoff performances, it almost reads similar. It almost reads similar. And I let me pull up these numbers real quick, because apparently I was unprepared. I'm sorry, bud.
Okay.
When you look at – here it is right here, and I'll pull it up. And I got his postseason numbers right here because, again, you pay him for this. But his last three playoff starts, all of them losses. Okay,
yeah.
lost last year. Lost last year in Game One against Baltimore. Game One.
Baltimore.
Lost what? 12-3.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, in Game Six against Boston, lost 5-2, and in Game Two, lost to Boston 6-5, and then. The year before,
beat him in 2011.
And 2011. Lost twice to Texas. Lost once to Oakland in 2012. Lost to the San Francisco Giants in the World Series, Game 7, as a matter of Game 4. So, I mean, we're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wins. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 losses. He's 5-7 in the postseason.
Right. And when you talk about the postseason, I think that – you have to differentiate.
By the way, 3.7.
Differentiate.
By the way, and a 3.73 ERA in the postseason, not good enough.
I don't care about ERA in the postseason. I care about wins and losses. I don't care about ERA. I'll tell you why. A starting pitcher's job in a postseason game is to not give up a tie or a lead. That's their job.
And Max Scherzer has done that.
Yeah, many times. It's not ERA, strikeouts, walk to ratio. I don't care about any of those stats in the playoffs. When it comes to starting pitcher, I care about wins and losses in the playoffs, because when it comes to playoff time, how many runs you give up is not the point. It's, do you give up a lead? Does your team have the lead, and do you win the game? That is a postseason stat. It's the only time in baseball where you can actually look at a pitcher and say your win-loss record is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's playoff baseball. And look at his stats in the playoffs. The Nationals are probably, they are the class of the National League East. Sorry, football talk got in my head.
Mm-hmm.
They are the class of the NL East. But what happens when they match up against the Giants again? What happens when they match up against the Cardinals, who can match a Max Scherzer, a Steven Strasburg?
Giants, Dodgers.
Because
let me tell you something. Giants, Dodgers, Cardinals, Pirates.
Pirates, maybe, yeah.
Pirates.
I mean, and this is why ignoring your bullpen is the worst thing you can do if you want to win the World Series, which is what the Nationals did this offseason. They didn't learn the lesson of postseason, which is your starter is going to keep you in the game. That's his job. His job is to give the bullpen the ball with the lead, and the bullpen's job is to close it.
Look how important the bullpen is. Kansas City rode that bullpen to the World Series. And, by the way, by only averaging six and two-thirds of an innings per start. That's a cumulative average. That's not to say that James Shields didn't average eight or whatever. It was a cumulative average from their starters from the beginning to the end. And so what they did was they stacked their bullpen. So we talk about it shorting it two innings, having a bullpen that makes it a seven-inning game. Well, the Royals made it a six-inning game and basically said, that's fine. We're going to turn it over to a bullpen in the sixth, and we're going to shut you down the rest of the way. That's how good a bullpen could be. Now, granted, that was the exception, Bo, not necessarily the rule. But you can understand exactly, and we have seen cases of what a very good bullpen is going to be able to do for you.
Yeah,
you saw it firsthand with your Texas Rangers in their two LCS appearances in back-to-back years of what a good bullpen is going to be doing. Now, granted, they had good starting pitching as well too. But if something should falter, and you needed a long man to come out of the bullpen, they had it. As a matter of fact, they had two, and they were able to not only stop the bleeding, but then their offense was able to drive in runs and make it a new game again. That's a different story. But that's the thing about this is they lost Tyler Clifford to the A's, which I didn't necessarily agree with. I mean, I thought that was very good for Billy Bean.
Great play for
that me. He was able to turn Yuniel Escobar into Tyler Clifford.
Right.
But for the most part, now all of a sudden, now they have a bullpen piece that you have to figure out how you're going to mix and match, or at least go out and get one. And Andrew Miller and Robertson are off the market, so you don't have that option.
Right, and that's the point. Look at the hitters they pass on. Look at the bullpen guys. Why weren't they in on Robertson? Why weren't they in on Miller? You have this kind of money. You got to get those two guys, put them in the rotation you went to war with last year.
I will tell you that the Washington Nationals, up to this point, even with Scherzer, have about a C grade for me in this offseason. A C grade. As a matter of fact, I'll probably even say it's a C minus grade. Do you know who actually? I would actually give the Astros a better offseason grade.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Because the Astros are actually plugging holes.
Yeah,
they're not adding to a string to make it a super rotation.
They traded. Cubs and then turned around and signed Colby Rasmus.
Yeah.
Like that was like it was like one and the next day, boom, figured it out. You're done.
That was a very good two moves in a row right there for the Astros. It really was.
Well, considering Dexter Fowler is a horrible defender, he's a very good offensive player. He's a horrible defender. But you know, you get Colby Rasmus, who could theoretically on $8 million put up a monster season there. But I digress. What I will say about this, and I know that we only had about an hour today, Bo, and so we're about 5 minutes or so. I'm sure we're going to go over because that's just what we do. I want to talk to you about specifically in the American League. I know that we've seen some stars shift from the American League to the National League, Max Scherzer being one. But I don't recall ever seeing a time in Major League Baseball where you see like a good sense of balance between both leagues. To me, I look at this and I don't see the American League being so one-sided as it used to be. I think there's an even disparity between the two. But when I look at the American League still, I still look at this as being the class league of the two. I see more winning teams out of the American League than I do with the National League. Sure. Like, I'll give you a good example. Phillies, Mets, Braves are probably going to have a losing season. I would probably think that the Brewers may or may not have a losing season. Same with the Reds. There's like tweener teams. The Cubs, I think, are still going to have a losing season.
Mm-hmm.
Diamondbacks, Rockies, Padres, losing seasons. And in the American League, like in the West, it's going to be like...
I'm not sure there's a losing team in the West.
I was going to say, well, it's like, you know for sure, Angels, A's, Mariners, Rangers, winning teams. Well,
I think the Astros will be one too.
Well, hold on. With the Rangers, it's still a wait and see. Like, I don't want to imply because there's a huge
if they're healthy.
Right. That's the whole thing is there's
if they're healthy.
You have to know that they're going to be able to stay healthy first. Because if they do, yes, they are a winning team. If they don't, no. And then the Astros, I don't think they're going to be a winning team. I just think they're going to be a competitive team. But then you have. KC, who's still probably going to be a winning team, Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago, winning teams. Minnesota's like the lone losing team in that division. And then it's like Orioles, Red Sox, Yankees, Blue Jays, who I think are going to be winning teams, and it's going to be the Rays. Like every single division is only going to have at least one losing team. And then in the National League, each division is going to have at least two losing teams.
You know, the American League wildcard race is going to be fascinating.
It's going to be a fun year.
It's going to be fascinating to watch that AL wild card. This might actually be the first year where I look at the wild card standings in April. It might actually happen.
I won't do that. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But what I will say is, because I mean, like, what, like, are we talking like 10 games in the season? You're like, whoa! It's like, you know, the Royals and the Mariners. Royals are one game behind the Mariners for the wild card. It's like, dude, it's like April 10th.
I exaggerate, okay? But I'm definitely going to be looking at the wild card race a little sooner this year than normally because, I mean, you see it on the head. I mean, there's really only three, maybe four teams that are going to be out of it from start to finish, but that's only so many other teams in their division races, in their wild card races. This is going to be a fascinating year.
Can I ask you this? In the spirit of our buddy John Ames, who is the commissioner of fraud?
Yes.
He really is. He's the biggest.
He really is. He is the commissioner of fraud.
He is the commissioner of fraud, and I wish John Ames was on the show today.
Follow him on Twitter.
No,
at commissioner fraud. If you want to follow him on Twitter,
right? I'm gonna get him on the show because maybe next week I'll get him on the show. I don't know. Because here's the thing. I want to ask you this question because this is our yearly. You know, we're like I want to do this sporadically as we get to it. Of course, we're gonna have our preseason awards. You know, we do this every single year. We have our preseason awards, and then we try to, at the end of the year when we do our postseason awards, we try to match them and link them. It's a fun thing that we used to do, and we're going to do it again this year. But I want to have, like, the pre-preseason award show, and specifically when it comes to fraud. I want to know right now, in both leagues, who are the two biggest frauds?
Ooh.
In both leagues. Right now, because, I mean, right now we're in January. We're 5 weeks away from spring training. Barring any type of major trade, and I know James Shields still has to sign, but for the most part, Bo, what we're going to see from here on out is a bunch of non-roster signings, basically depth moves as we go into spring training. So for the most part, when you look at projected 25-man rosters, that's pretty close.
Yeah.
Right, that's almost. It's not a finished product because that won't be until the beginning of the season. But we're
sure.
as far as spring training, we're getting pretty close. It's pretty close to finished product.
Yeah, now you're talking about like fifth starters and last bullpen guys.
So what two teams? One team in each league. Who are the biggest frauds?
Ooh. Okay, I think in the American League, I'm going with the Tigers.
Okay.
Everyone's still talking about the Tigers, which they should be because the Central is not so strong that they can't win it. But I think they're going to be fraudulent. I really do. I don't like their offseason at all. Not even a little bit. Nationally, God, that's a tough one because you've got so many teams. I mean, can you really call a team that you know is going to be a losing team a fraud? You can't. So you got to pick from the team, looking at the teams that should have a winning season, but they're still going to be fraudulent. Oh, you know, I'm going with the Reds.
Oh.
I'm going with the Reds because on paper they should be a winning team, but I don't think they are.
Well,
I'm going with Cincy. Or maybe, actually, maybe the Padres, because they got a lot of ink this offseason. They did a lot of moves. Everyone's expecting them to do well. Maybe the Padres.
That's a pretty good pick for fraud, because that's my National League pick for fraud. I don't think the Reds are fraudulent, because the Reds are what they are. My American League team. Hold on real quick.
American League's a little easier to pick because there's so many.
No, okay, no, it's not even that. It's not even that. I just got carried away in my nerd psychosis. Here's the thing: my American League team has been my American League team for fraud for the last 2 years, and that is the Toronto Blue Jays. This team has fraud written all over it because they have been the epitome of fraud, and this is a team that again went out and added very good players. Russell Martin, they traded for Josh Donaldson, they get Michael Saunders from Seattle, they add that to Jose Reyes, Joey Bats, Edwin Canarcion. This is a team that is very good. Okay, this is offensively, this team is very good. They have a very good bench. I mean, Josh Toll, Justin Smoke, Steve Tolleson, Kevin PR, very good. Well, not Justin Smoke. But
sick to say, man.
Very good. Well, maybe in Toronto he'll be okay. Maybe he will. Anyway, but do you know what this team? This is we had our buddy Chris Mitchell, who is Mr. Roto expert, who lives in the AL East, who basically said, listen, if any team this offseason, the one team that dropped the biggest ball was the Toronto Blue Jays, because one thing that they just didn't need was another excuse to spend more money on offense. What they needed to do was go out and sign either a Max Scherzer or a James Shields. And if you didn't want to do that, then you know what? Go sign Andrew Miller or go sign David Robertson and do what the Royals did, in which was shorten their starting rotation by expanding your bullpen and making it so shut down that you actually can go, instead of shortening it to seven innings, you can shorten it to five and just make your bullpen your trademark.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't even do that. Like, they didn't even do that. They got Marco Estrada, and you're like, who cares? Right? It's like, it's like they got Marco Estrada in the bullpen. You're like, eh. And this whole pitching staff is still anchored by Dickey and Burley. And it's like Hutchinson, Stroman, and Daniel Norris. You're just like, this team is the biggest joke. It's a fraud. This is going to be a team. This is a team, by the way, that you and I thought last year could potentially break through and get into the playoffs. Now, granted, they did finish 2 games above 500, so it was a winning season. But they still finished 13 games out of first place with an afterthought in the wild card. Frauds.
You know what they remind me of?
The Toronto Blue Jays of last year?
No, they remind me of the they remind me of the 04 Rangers. You remember the 04 Rangers? Excuse me, 01 Rangers. You know,
oh, yeah. The A-Rod Fraud, the Fraud Rangers? Yeah.
Right. You know, because they had the best offense in baseball and the worst pitching staff in baseball. Where'd they finish? Last place. Some 30 games behind your Seattle Mariners.
Yeah. You know what? I will say that you're right. I think for me right now, the fraud team of the National League easily is the San Diego Padres. And the reason why I can't – well, the reason why I can't say the Chicago Cubs is because the Cubs are incomplete. I think, Joe Madden is going to make them competitive. And, of course, John Lester and Jason Hamill coming back is going to be good. They finally got a catcher, which is going to help. But I still think that team is still young where it needs to be a little bit more veteran. And I think that team is going to seriously go through some growing pain. So I'm not going to call them fraud, because I don't think the Cubs were legitimately brought up in hyperbole to put them on this pedestal. But the Padres were a different story. The Padres made it known with new ownership they were going to come out and they were going to blow straight fire at the entire league. And they did. I mean,
yeah, they did.
They get Tim, well, I think, was it Tim Federich, you know, from the Dodgers. They got Federich from the Dodgers. They got Barmas from the Barmas as a free agent. They trade for Will Myers, Matt Kemp, Justin Upton. They traded for Derek Norris as a catcher. And they got Brandon Morrow free agency. But for the most part, this is a rotation that this is they I'll give them credit. They revamped their outfield. They kind of filled some very big holes they needed to fill. But for the most part, what they needed to fill was their bullpen. They did get Sean Kelly from New York, which is a pretty decent trade. But for the most part, they needed to uptick more in the bullpen. They needed a better back end of the bullpen. Again, Andrew Miller was out there, and David Robertson was out there. That would have been a lot better than Joaquin Benoit, who should be a setup guy. They ignored their bullpen, Bo, and I'm sorry, your ace right now is Andrew Cashner. By the way, I'm not opposed to Andrew Cashner.
No, of course not.
Tyson Ross and Ian Kennedy are okay, but for the most part, they did not address the front end of the rotation or the back end of their bullpen, and you can score as many runs as you want, but you know what, though? You can still lose a lot of 9-8 ball games, and you know what?
Absolutely.
To me, this team seems like what the Angels were just 2 years ago. Frauds.
You have to look at that division. How can you compete with the Dodgers and Giants if you can't at least come close to them in the starting rotation?
You know what's kind of funny is, I hate to say this. Right now, and I'm not a fan of anything that is the Arizona Diamondbacks. I just don't like the Diamondbacks. But right now, if you asked me which rotation that I would take, I'd take the Diamondbacks.
It's a good rotation.
They got, I mean, what was it? They get Helixson, Ruby De La Rosa, and Alan Webster all of this offseason. They put it with Collmer and Trevor Cahill, who, by the way, is not even close to being what he was in Oakland.
Not even close. That's a big disappointment for me.
I will take that rotation before I take San Diego's rotation.
Oh, of course.
Frauds, Bo. It is fraudulent. Fraudulent. Who? By the way, I know that we're way up against the wall, but I don't really care. I mean, this is my show, so we can go over. who is going to be the two teams in each league that is going to either make the playoffs or push the playoffs this year that weren't last year?
Ooh, I really like what the White Sox have done in the American League. I really like what the White Sox have done. I think in the American League Central, the way it is now, that is a team that can just come out of nowhere and win that division, which I don't think you can call it coming out of nowhere. They had a really good offseason in Chicago. National League, I think it's going to be the usual suspects in the National League, Steve. I just don't see. I mean, look at the playoff teams from last year. The Nationals should win the National League East by 8 games. The Central, maybe in the Central, you know, you could see, I mean, the Pirates were a wild card team last year.
Right.
You know, you maybe see them make the jump to win that division because the Reds aren't as good. The Cardinals are still good. But I think the Pirates might be able to challenge them. I don't know if that counts in terms of what you're asking. The West, I still think it's the Giants and the Dodgers that are going to go toe-to-toe, and the loser is going to be in the wild card game. So I just don't see much of a turnover in the National League. I don't see that any team has really jumped out to me that could challenge the status quo.
Mm.
In the National, I think we're going to look at the same type of a playoff picture in the National League. The American League, I really like those White Sox, Steve. I am so close to picking them in the American League Central. I have no idea how close I am to picking that team.
I have two teams in the National League, and number one, it's the Miami Marlins. I think the Miami Marlins. I think the Marlins, you know, had a very, very good.
But was it enough?
I think it was the same division as the Nationals. They get D. Gordon from the Dodgers, which I thought was
fantastic.
I thought it was fantastic for them. I didn't understand what Friedman's decision was on this one. I mean, yeah, you get Howie Kendrick, okay, fine, whatever. But D. Gordon is going to be very good for the Miami Marlins. They finally get a leadoff hitter that's going to be able to do wonders for Yelich and Stanton. They signed Mike Morse, which I like. I like the idea of Mike Morse. He comes over and plays first base. And you know what? He had a very good year last year with San Francisco, very underrated. And I think he's going to provide some stability in that lineup behind Mike Stanton. They get Martin Prado in a trade from the Yankees, which I like. So they finally get a legit third baseman, a legit second baseman, and Mike Morse is going to be okay. They still got Ozuna. They still got, you know, Hechevarria. They still got Saltalamacchia. That lineup got a little bit better.
Sure.
I like, you know, I like what they did with their rotation. They get Matt Latos, which I liked. I thought that was a – see, that's why I understand why you said Cincinnati as a fraud, because they really – not only did they not do anything to improve their team, they actually got worse in certain areas. But Latos, if Latos can stay healthy, like, I mean, legitimately healthy, that is going to pay dividends, because he's only 27 and he will pay dividends for the Marlins. And they get Dan Heron for the back end of that rotation.
If he pitches.
They get he actually said that he was going to show up for training camp with Miami, because
that doesn't mean he's going to do it.
No, I mean,
all it means he's going to show up.
No, do you know why he did? This actually just came down a couple weeks ago. He is going to be participating in full capacity with the Marlins, because you know why? $10 million. That's the reason why. And so, there is a contingency, because again, he basically said, listen, but you have to promise me if the Marlins are out by July 31st, that he trades them, he gets traded back to the West Coast. So that's there was concessions made. But
yeah, there's three teams out West that he could be traded to.
Right. I mean, but it's,
the Angels don't have the farm system. The A's do, but I don't think they're going to be in a position to make that trade. And the Dodgers don't need him. So how's
Padres, Angels, Dodgers.
I forgot about the Friars.
Angels, excuse me. Padres, Angels, Dodgers, A's, Giants. There's five teams in LA, five teams in California, and then also there's also the Seattle Mariners there on the West Coast as well too. So, listen, all I'm saying is this: you add Latos and Heron to this rotation. You already had Jared Cosart, who they got last year from Houston, which I thought was the most underrated deal at that deadline. And they got Henderson Alvarez, who's pitching wonderfully. This is a very good 1-4, and their bullpen, I thought, was very good. They get Aaron Crow from KC. They got David Phelps from New York. 40 to a very good bullpen. And, oh, by the way, Jose Fernandez will be coming back as well, too. So, listen, this is a very good Marlins team that I think is going to be underrated. Now, the question is, you know they're not going to win the division, Bo.
Right.
But the question is, as a wild card team, would you be out of the realm of possibility to think that the Marlins can't win 85 games this year?
No, absolutely not. And I mean, they were in the wild card race last year, and you look at that. We talked about it earlier in the show. National League is down.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible they could be a wild card team. I don't know if they've done enough. I mean, that roster, it's a lot of turnover. I really want to see how they do in April and see how all these pieces come together. But
the other team,
certainly not a possibility.
The other team I like is the Milwaukee Brewers. And I've been talking about the Brewers for at least 3 years, and I don't know why I can't stop talking about this team, because when you look at them, you're just kind of like, well, they have done exactly what they've always done, which is seem to finish in the middle of the pack. Last year was 82 wins. They finished eight games out, 82 and 80, which is as close to 500. As 500.
They also took a horrid last 6 weeks of the season. They were in contention.
Right. I mean, but this team played to exactly what their talent says that they're capable of playing. Now, certainly Carlos Gomez is going to have to bounce back, and they're counting on a lot of bounce back years. They get Adam Lind. You know, they got Adam Lind last year. They got Scooter. You know, they just got Luis Sardinas, who is going to fill in quite nicely, I think.
Utility guy.
You know, I will say the thing about this is they just traded Yovani Guerrero. Okay, that's fine. So now they're, you know, the conventional wisdom says now they're going to push for another starter, because they're going to have to need one. I think their bullpen is fine, Bo. Jonathan Broxton at the end of the thing. I think that was actually the best thing about the Brewers last year was their bullpen. So I don't think that's an issue. I think it's their one starter away, which they're going to have to address. And I really think that they should have at least done at least one more bat, because right now in left field, they're talking about Chris Davis, not the Chris Davis you think. It's Chris Davis spelled with a K-H-R-I-S, a guy who is I don't even know who this dude is.
It's either
Chris Davis, Gerardo Parra, or Logan Schaefer. So listen, they need a left fielder, and so they have to figure something out.
Parra's not too bad.
With one bat and one more starting pitcher, I think this team is going to be at least another wild card team in the National League. But for the American League, there's a slew of them. Okay,
there really is.
I mean, I talked about Toronto being a fraud, but they also could be a wild card team. I know that you mentioned the White Sox, and yes, Jeff Samardzija coming over was probably the biggest thing that could have happened. But I'm not a big fan of the White Sox bullpen. I've never been a big fan of the White Sox bullpen. I think for me the thing that did it for me was just the fact that Samardzija comes over. That's cool because you at least try to figure out a way to extend the game into the eighth inning. You did that with Samardzija, and they did get David Robertson. That's going to help.
Yeah.
And they did get Zach Duke. That is going
to
help. But Zach Putnam and Javi Guerra and Daniel Webb and Mikhail Clito, former Mariner farmhand, these guys were average at best. Zach Putnam was okay. But for the most part, it's they got some good pieces, but they're surrounded by mediocre pieces. And so the thing is, what they really needed to do was get David Robertson and bring in another bullpen piece to put right behind him. So it's like, listen, if you have Sale and you have Samardzija and Quintana going seven, you have to hand the ball off to somebody before you get to Robertson.
True.
And Zach Duke is a middle reliever. So it's you know, it is what it is. What I will say is I'm not a big fan of that bullpen, but the two teams that I really like are the Cleveland Indians. Really like the Cleveland Indians. I think that's going to be a wild card team. Terry Francona has that team playing. They're going to have some bounce back years offensively, but pitching wise, next to Seattle, I don't think there's a team that has that type of depth rotation wise, bullpen wise, like Seattle. And of course, Seattle is the other team that I'm talking about because I don't think there's any team that had a better offseason in the American League than Seattle this year. But getting back to Cleveland, though, this is how Cleveland's going to make their season. And I know that you said Detroit could possibly be one. I don't know because, I mean, even if Verlander doesn't struggle, they still have Anibal Sanchez who they're going to get back 100%. So even if
– David Price.
Even if Verlander is what we saw from Verlander, they still have David Price. They're going to have Anibal Sanchez, and they got Alfredo Simon from Cincinnati. That could pay off dividends. So I like them a little bit more towards the competing side than fraud side. But the thing with Cleveland is it's not – from a pitching standpoint. Pitching-wise, they are phenomenal. That is a very good pitching team, starting rotation, bullpen-wise. I love the fact that Kluber is number one, and Danny Salazar right now is listed as their five, and Salazar, by the way, is phenomenal.
Can they hit?
The thing about this is in order for them to compete, Michael Bourne, Jason Kipnis, and Nick Swisher all have to bounce back. Because last year Michael Bourne was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Swisher is literally becoming an albatross, and Jason Kipnis had a bad year.
Yeah.
They get Brandon Moss, which is going to pay dividends. Brandon Moss is going to pay dividends, but you can't rely on Yan Gomes all season and Michael Brantley. And Carlos Santana has to come back.
Mm-hmm.
If they get Santana and say, let's say they get Michael Bourne and Santana back, okay? And Kipnis, and you add that to Santana and Brantley, Gomes, and then Brandon Moss comes over and does what he does that he did in Oakland. That is a playoff team. They can withstand Nick Swisher hitting .220. It's going to have to take bounce back years from at least Michael Bourne and Jason Kipnis. At least that. Pitching-wise, this is a very good team. Very good team.
Yeah, but can they hit? I want to see if they can hit first.
I actually think Cleveland's the best team in this division, pound for pound.
They might be. They certainly have the best pitching in the division.
They are. I think what's funny is I even think Minnesota's going to have a better year. But for the most part, now, that's not to say that Detroit doesn't hit better than them. I think Detroit is the best offensive team, and I think followed by Detroit, it's going to be Chicago
yep.
offensively. I think Kansas City is going to regress some, but I really think that Cleveland, if they can just get enough offense, that pitching is going to keep them in it. And I think Cleveland is going to be one of those wild card teams. And of course, Seattle, I really like what Seattle did, Bo. And it's they did the obvious things. Like, I think if there's any team that was poised to do the obvious, it was going to be Seattle. Nelson Cruz seemed like the obvious. Like, if there was any team that he was going to go, of course it's going to be to Seattle. That seemed obvious. And, of course, you know, they were out, you know, after Melky Cabrera, they decided to go with the platoon of Smith and Ruggiano. That seemed a little obvious. So the Mariners definitely improved. They actually, as a matter of fact, if you go by wins above replacement, which is a pretty standard metric, Bo, last year they finished at 33.6. And if you take away all the if you subtract everybody that left and add everybody to it, they actually would have been a 41 win team last year, 41 WAR, which actually would have made them a playoff team. So, clearly they improved. And I think they actually made the most improvement of any team in the American League, which is very good news for me. But, you know, I think when it's all said and done, Bo, I think expectations versus hyperbole is most of these teams are going to be what everybody thinks they are. Don't buy into the hype, Bo. Don't buy into the hype because, you know what, of course, right now what's going to happen is there has to be some level of hype because you have to drive the early ratings going into spring training.
Of course.
Right.
You got to sell those spring training tickets.
Right. Well, you also have to sell the sport for ratings on TV. But the thing about it is most of these teams are going to be exactly what they are.
Yeah.
You know, we figure the Yankees are going to be the Yankees, and well, at least in terms of wins and losses from last year. Maybe you'll see some regression upwards with Boston, same with a little step back from Baltimore. But for the most part, the East is going to be kind of a regressed division. The Central is on an uptick, but the West is going to be where the baseball is in the American League. The West is where it's going to be.
The West is going to be fascinating.
The West is going to be the best division in American League, straight up. I'm going to say it right now.
Probably the best division of baseball, and I can't wait to watch this. I can't wait to watch this. I mean, you've got five teams, none of which are a pushover. We can't call the Astros a pushover anymore.
No, that's why I said it. I mean, it's like four teams are going to be very – this is going to be what the NFC East used to be. Four teams that are going to literally bruise the hell out of each other, and it's going to be which team is going to do the most outside of the division. Who's going to take advantage of the sub-500 teams, and who is going to do the best against the Central and the East is going to win this division. And generally speaking, if you ask me, I'm going to take the team with the best pitching.
Of course, absolutely.
The thing I hate about the Mariners is they're the most traveled team in the American League, Bo. Most traveled team in baseball.
Oh, there's nothing you can do about that.
Right, and so you got to travel, and that takes a wear and tear. But I'll tell you what, the problem that I have with this is...
Why don't you just move to Oklahoma City?
Well, oh, Game six, buddy. Game six.
Oh!
So here's the thing about
turn
this
about
is,
fair play.
the thing about this is what kind of production you're going to get at Safeco Field versus on the road. Last year, the Mariners were the second best road team in baseball, and they were the third to the worst home team in baseball as well too. So it's going to be that's going to be interesting. But Bo, we are up against the wall. It's been fun. It's been fun. So where are your cheers going to this week?
My cheers this week.
First of all, what are you drinking and who you're cheersing?
I'm drinking some fine Kentucky bourbon.
Fine Kentucky bourbon.
Fine Kentucky bourbon. That's what I'm drinking. I've had one glass. Yeah. I've had one glass. What am I cheering to this week? God, there's so much I could cheer to. So much. What to pick? I tell you what. I am going to cheers, and this is probably the only time I could ever do this. I'm going to cheer Scott Boras. Because when Scherzer came out early in the offseason and it was reported that he wanted $200 million. You had the same reaction I did. Good luck with that, buddy. Good luck. What does Boras do? It took some serious creativity from both sides, but he got his $200 million from Max Scherzer, who we both said on this show tonight is a number two. Man did his job. I'm cheering him.
Fantastic, man. But I will say,
I hope I never have to do that again, by the way.
What cheers?
Cheers, Scott Boras.
I will say, I am drinking the huge. It is the quintessential Steve. It is the blue moon. The blue moon is the one and the only. It's the original. It is what makes Steve Steve. It is stripped down. It's not pretentious. It packs a little punch, but it is the common folk of beer. It is the everyday man of beer, and that is why that is you like that is the everyday man of beer.
I thought that was Coors.
Go ahead and tweet that one. That's a gem. It's the everyday man of beer.
You said it. You tweet it.
I will.
My
but I can't do that
be
because
like
that, because I can't do that because then it makes me pretentious. Because now I'm like literally.
Hey, what did we just say about all these baseball teams? You are what you are. Just do it.
Yeah, but I can't do that. I mean, it's okay. So anyway, I'm cheersing. You know what's kind of funny is it's Scott Boras is a good cheer because you know Scott Boras just does what Scott Boras does and I'm not surprised. So I like your cheers, but I'm going to cheers the Seattle Seahawks because you know Bo, this we live in an age of parity so much so in the NFL that you don't see a lot of repeat Super Bowl entries, let alone repeat back to back champions. And of course the Seahawks, even if they lose this game. It is something that we just haven't seen. We haven't seen it since 2004-05 with the Patriots. Before that, it was the Broncos, and before that, it was your Cowboys.
Right.
So we just don't see this a lot in the modern free agent era. And so to see it, and the way that we saw it, especially when the Seahawks started the season, they were 3-3, then they were 6-4. There's a lot of questions about whether or not maybe the Super Bowl hangover has been taking effect to a point where not a lot of people thought this was the playoff team. In the last 10 weeks, the Seahawks have been on fire. And it culminated with last week's NFC Championship where you're just kind of like, well, they were down like 19-6. And
yeah.
You're kind of like, well, it's like a lightweight got into a fight with a heavyweight and has given them everything that they can give.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the heavyweight didn't want to get into this bout. They knew it going in that this is probably going to be a fight that they're going to lose. And they take it anyways because of the money. And this lightweight is giving them everything that they can handle, and it's not going their way. And in literally in a span of 2.5 minutes, the Seahawks go to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
So not only am I cheering the greatest comeback probably in NFL history, NFL playoff history, but the fact that the Seahawks are back in the Super Bowl and we could see a back-to-back. I think, Bo, even you – can raise even you as the die-in-the-wool Cowboys fan who probably despises Seattle because of the fact. But listen, man, it's everything the Cowboys aren't. It's the thing where you kind of wish the Cowboys were. You know what
okay.
I mean? That, hold on, I'm just saying.
Calm down. I feel it. Win four more. We can talk.
No, this is what I'm talking about, man. And I know. Listen, I'm going to break this down really quickly. And I will say this is because. As a Cowboy fan, this is what you want for your team, a dominating, dirtbaggian type of team where you can throw it in the noses of your opponents. And you know what? And you have the American team's tag, America's team tag behind it, and it's the team that everybody loves to hate. That's exactly what you would want with the Cowboys.
I still have that.
Right.
Everyone hates us.
Right, but the thing about this is at least you can appreciate it. And you know what? Seattle, say what you will, this will probably never happen again. So you can at least raise your glass to the fact that, you know what, right now the toast of the NFL is the Seattle Seahawks. So to John Schneider, Pete Carroll, Paul Allen, and everybody that suits up for everybody, my beer is for you. Bo, that's it for us this week. Next week we'll return, and of course we're still going to be talking more baseball. We are going to give you our Super Bowl picks, our stone cold – I hate to say this – our stone cold – actually, you know what, our ice cold beer picks. That's what we will call it. We will give us our picks. We'll have a few guests on next week. I think maybe we even will bring in the Commish of Fraud to tell us if the Patriots are fraudulent. That should be fun. So until next time, Bo, take us out.